Good morning, and this is Glenn Coble with the program called A Progressive Life. And we hope you are enjoying a rather brisk morning. I think it was 35 degrees when I came in just a few moments ago. And it was the wind wasn't so bad. So it, like Scott said on the weather forecast, he didn't say anything about snow. That sounds good to me. A progressive life. I've been trying to run down my life because most of you don't know all the back my background because I've only lived in Marion for about 14 years, so I've been going over it. I've gotten all the way through to when I was at Ohio University as assistant athletic director, and just about completed that one, I will talk about the period following that, and then I think probably 2 weeks from 3 weeks from now I will have it all wrapped up. I say 3 weeks from now because next Monday is Christmas Eve, and I will be driving to North Carolina to visit my grandchildren and my daughter and her husband. And so we're going to run one of my previous shows on a week from today. So make sure you mark that down if you want to hear one of my older shows. I wanted to point out that tomorrow evening, I hope this is okay that I point this out, I think it is, excuse me, tomorrow evening at about 7:10, we're going to have a Christmas party that'll be on the air with several of the people that work here at the radio station, and I invite you to turn it on and listen to us having a good time. I'm sure we will be silly because when we get this many people, and it looks like there's about maybe as many as a dozen to 15 people coming to the party, and if we get that many people in this little tiny room, it's bound to be silly. I'm a little verklempt this morning, as they used to say on Saturday Night Live. I wanted to also remind you that you can call in and voice your opinion, either pro or against whatever I'm saying, or just a thought. And we'd love to have you call in. Let me give you the phone number. Get a pencil out, and we'll give you the phone number here in a moment. One of the things, as many of my listeners know, I ran for state representative. I ran for state representative this past election season. I was not the winner, but I did learn a lot. I enjoyed it a lot, and I've been asked by several people if I'm interested in running again, and I quite frankly haven't even I've thought about it, but I haven't put any positive or negative markings next to that in my to-do list. But I did want to, I found this interesting quote from John Kennedy. And if you listen to the show, I try to do a few quotes every show to give you a taste of where I stand. Anyway, this is from John F. Kennedy. Let us not seek the Republican answer or the Democratic answer, but the right answer. Let us not seek to fix the blame for the past. Let us accept our own responsibility for the future. And I think that's a terrific quote to use today, even though this quote was probably back in the 70s. Maybe even earlier than that. It's a terrific quote, and it makes us all think. Also, at this time of peace, Albert Einstein said, "All of us who are concerned for peace and triumph of reason and justice must be cleanly aware of how small an influence reason and honest goodwill exert on the events of the political field." I hope that wasn't true in my case. And I kind of ran on the idea that if it came out of my mouth, it would be honest. And I have to admit, I used to use what I call the Trump policy on my mother. I used to tell her the same thing over and over again to try to get my way. And I figured if I told her the same thing 20 times, even if it was a lie, if I told her 20 times, eventually it would sound true. I'm not sure if my mother ever bought that. She was a pretty smart lady in her own way. Anyway, back to where I came from. speaking of my mother, my wife and I moved down to Athens, I believe it was in 83. And yes, it was 83. We had three very young children. Well, two very young children and one fairly young child. And we decided to make home, make Athens our home. But eventually, a new president came to OU, and he told my athletic director, my boss, that he needed to get rid of his staff because he was going to make, I think it was make Ohio University the Florida State of the North. It didn't happen, quite frankly, but he did get rid of most of the male staff was allowed to leave. They did give us about a year, and on the way out, I tried to find different jobs that I could do, and I found one that I really enjoyed, and that was writing for the Messenger, which is Athens' daily newspaper down there. And I started out writing for the Messenger as a community beat writer. And that I would go around to all the little communities. And there are lots of little communities down in southeastern Ohio where, like Chauncey, and they pronounce it Chauncey, not Chauncey, even though it's spelled like Chauncey. Chauncey is where I spent a lot of time. Albany, down in Meigs County, there's Pomeroy. There are lots of fairly small towns, but they have political organizations that need to be followed. And we followed, Nelsonville is another town. I forgot about Nelsonville. That was a pretty big town. We followed, the Messenger followed the political goings on down there, and I was pretty much assigned weekly to go out to the Chauncey. I'm not sure whether it was called a board or the Chauncey council meetings, and I'd go out to those. They were great fun. There were usually 30 people jammed into a little tiny room that could seat 20, and none of them agreed with anything that the council wanted to put through. So it got quite boisterous and actually quite difficult to report on, because there was some shouting and threats of violence. But it was great fun because I was right there and I had to write down everything that was going on, or everything that I could see that was going on. And they had a deputy sheriff. Well, he wasn't a sheriff. He was just a deputy, that kind of a Barney Fife type guy. Maybe a little stronger, a little smarter. Well, maybe not smarter, but a little bit more virile than Barney Fife. But he did all sorts of things. Oh, and he happened to be the brother, I believe, of the mayor, which led to many conflicts of interest. And he did whatever he wanted to do and didn't seem to have any pushback. So the only person that could push him back was me, because I could write what was going on, and we did. And occasionally I got into little mixed discussions with him. And there were a lot of things that most people would consider probably not ethical that went on. And I tried to expose those too. But anyway, it was a good first, I don't know, 6 months, I guess, I wrote for the Messenger as the that writer. And then they moved me on to the education beat, and that really opened my eyes. And one of the things I followed then was the Board of Education meetings and learned a lot about education and how Ohio funds education. If you recall correctly, back in the days, let's see, that was probably late 90s. And back in those days, our eventual governor, Strickland, Ted Strickland was our representative in the area, so I got to interview him a couple of times, and he was trying to and successfully helped get the Supreme Court of Ohio to say that we were funding our education illegally. And let's see, that was back in the 90s, and it's now 2018. That has never been quite settled. It's still out there, and there's still a lot of theory that it is being funded illegally. And I did get to find out how it's done, and the formula for figuring out the funding took a whole page long, with maybe 30, 40 lines of you do this, you don't do that, you cut this, you cut that. And it was, I don't know how boards of education could really understand what they were doing, because it just seems so complicated. And I got to listen to a lot of superintendents of schools rail against the way it was funded. Like I said, it has not been changed, so we still are doing things in the old style, I guess, of funding our education. Then the powers that be at the Messenger, after about a year of me being a beat writer for a couple different beats, decided that they wanted to move me into sports editor, because the other sports editor had failing health, and he was kind of trying to step down at the time. So they moved me into sports editor, meanwhile cutting back the staff of the entire paper. The staff of the paper when I went there, now mind you, this has only been a year, the staff when I went there was 142 people, I believe. And by the time I left 2 years later, a little over 2 years later, it was down to 70-some. So it was cut in half. And that meant a lot of people doing double, triple, and quadruple duty, including yours truly. I had to get up very early in the morning, probably about 4:30, something like that, get to the newspaper, paginate the pages. Now, paginating the pages is a term that people that have been in newspaper business will understand, and probably only those people will understand. But I had to put the stories in the order that they were going into the newspaper. And first of all, I had to read them. I had to edit them, and then shove them into the newspaper in a understandable order. And also I had to make decisions which articles would have to be cut because of space, and kind of had to make decisions how I could fit stories around advertising. And if you know nothing else about the newspaper business, you don't want to mess up an advertisement. That's where the money comes from. It's the same in the radio business. And so that's what I did for the next year and a half, something like that. And I enjoyed myself immensely. I learned a lot about the honesty and integrity of newspaper people, because most of the people that were still there, the editor that I reported to, and several of the other beat writers and other, well, by the time I left there, there weren't that many, but several of the other reporters that I dealt with were very honorable people, and really took the word ultimate. It was very important that what you said was honest to the best of your ability. And I know a lot of people think that the news, and the news has changed since then, but a lot of people think the news is, well, to use Mr. Trump's word, fake. But it's been my experience. It was not fake. Especially the mainline news stuff was very, very well sourced. And even at the Messenger, I was required, if I wanted to write an article, I was required to have at least two sources of what I was saying. But it was a great time, and I really enjoyed it. My youngest son, who is playing basketball for the Athens High School and on his way to becoming an All-American in basketball, it was great fun for me because I got to go to all those games officially. And I didn't write the stories. That would have been a conflict of interest. But I did get to go and watch my reporter cover the story and had a good time doing that. After that, I decided that I really wanted to do something a little bit different, and I had a great friend. He is still down in Athens. Don Wood is his name, and Don owned a very large Ford, Chevy, well, you name it, GMC, a very large dealership. And he said, you need to be a car salesman. You have the type of personality to be a great car salesman. Come and stay with me for a few years, and we'll make your fortune, and then you can do whatever you want to do. And I had pretty much been burned out of athletics by then because of, well, 18 years of working in athletics and many of the weeks extending way beyond 80-hour weeks, you do get a little tired of it. So I agreed that I would go work for Mr. Wood. And on my very first day off, I went in on Monday, and I believe it was Tuesday was my very first day off, was September 11th. And we all know what happened on September 11th. Kind of a shocking day that will live in all of our hearts that we're alive with total lack of understanding. So that's where I was on December 11th. But once we got through that, and we still haven't gotten through it politically, but once we got past it, I went on for about 2 years. I had just turned 50 at the time, I believe. And I was kind of the guy that they sent all the older folks to. We had lots of very young salesmen, but if an older couple, you know, and when I'm saying older, a couple over 50 years old came into the dealership, it seemed to be that people would push them off on me. Well, at that time, everybody knew what the new cost of a car was. It was it had started to leak out into the public, and so people would come in and say, I'm not paying more than $100 over the cost, and which was great because I didn't really have to do much sales in that case because I knew I was going to sell a car, and most of the cars I sold were brand new because a lot of older people tend to buy brand new cars. But there's no money to be made if you're only making $100 on each car, and so I didn't make a whole lot of money. I did enjoy. My wife tells me I enjoyed it. I didn't realize I was enjoying it at the time because I was concerned about the money. But I did like talking to people, and I did like I was in a situation where I didn't have to be dishonest. I just enjoyed the camaraderie. Camaraderie with people. Well, I have a phone call. I'm going to respond to this phone call, I believe. Hello, you're on the air. I'm sorry. Apparently, it went to the other person, so I'm going to put the phone back up. And anyway, we had lots of very interesting people who were salespeople, some who were very honest people, some who were not so honest. We had one gentleman who had a little bit of a problem with the alcohol, and he was once arrested for a DUI while driving a bicycle. I had never heard of that before, but he ended up getting caught because he was driving through somebody's yard trying to get away from the police that were chasing him in a car, and he ran into one of those guy wires that holds up a telephone pole and just knocked him for a loop, and they were able to catch him and arrest him. We had another gentleman who made well into the six figures and had really very little concern about honesty. He would tell the customer whatever it took to sell the car for as much as he could sell it. We also had several other people that I have grown or that I grew to be very close friends with, very nice people. I did enjoy my couple of years there. But my wife realized that we couldn't afford for me to make that little amount of money, and I realized it, and I had always wanted to own a sporting goods store, and an opportunity came up, and I had some leftover money. Well, it wasn't leftover money. It was money from working 18 years in athletics. And it was aside in a 401k or something like that. It was actually a different vehicle, but I had money left that we could work with. And I bought a franchise with Play It Again Sports, which I hoped to put into Athens. And then I was told by the franchisor that I was not allowed to go into Athens, which I to this day believe was a mistake. But they put me in up at Lancaster, and for the next 5 years, I ran a Play It Again Sports store in downtown Lancaster, Ohio, fighting against two malls and 20 mile away from Columbus, where there were all sorts of big box sporting goods stores. It was kind of rough. I enjoyed it. I learned a lot. I learned a lot about business. And we did make it 5 years, and a lot of places don't make it that long. But after 5 years, my wife and I decided we better get out while the getting was good, while we still had enough money to pay down the bills that we already owed. While I was there, I hired some really interesting people, mostly at minimum wage. I had one young man who stayed with me for the whole time. And I did give him a raise. He got maybe 50 cents above minimum wage after a couple of raises. And I had one guy rob me blind, well, at least steal $500 from me. He came to work for me, acted like a totally honest and perfect employee. He did exactly what he was supposed to do. He was almost too good to be true. And so I allowed him to close one night. And the next morning I came into the store, and all the money was taken out of the cash register, and he was nowhere to be found. And the police never did find him. Things like that small businesses have to deal with. You know, petty cash stealing, people stealing from your store. But most of the time I really enjoyed it. We built golf clubs and for people, and I loved doing that. We had every exercise piece of equipment you can imagine. We helped people who wanted to sell some of their exercise equipment that was bought for them the previous Christmas, and the only thing it had done is hold up a suit coat or a pair of pants. and we had, matter of fact, I still have a treadmill that I am very good about walking on every day. If I'm inside, it has to be on the treadmill. I still use it. That's been a long time. That was a very good treadmill. It cost well over $1,000. And back then that was some real money. And so, after about 5 years, matter of fact, on the first day of 2001, I believe it was, on January 1st or 2nd, my wife and I decided to close the business and lick our wounds and run. So I started searching around for other jobs, and I actually got an interesting opportunity. I was offered to be a vice president for a company, and I won't mention the gentleman's name, but a gentleman out of Columbus who was very well-to-do, lived in New Albany, he offered to make me vice president for this new adventure, which was going to be publicizing and creating a play about Woody Hayes. And that play was going to be presented to different different groups of supporters, OSU supporters. And my job was to get around to the different communities that had expressed an interest and try and drum up more interest and drum up venues where we could perform this show. And that was right down my line, having been an actor and also been involved in a lot of theater when I was young, and also enjoying the sales opportunity. And I liked being a vice president. It sounded good. And so I went with this gentleman, and 6 months later, I got called into his office, and he said, "We've run out of money. We've decided," or the opportunity had run out of money. He hadn't, believe me, but he had decided that it was costing too much money, and they were going to do away with it. And I said, I pointed out to him that he had agreed to hire me for at least a year, and I learned real quickly that sometimes business people's word is no more valuable than Bitcoin. Some days it's up and some days it's down. Well, that day it was down. He did not honor his pledge to fulfill a year with me. I think I was there for 8 months. But I was very fortunate in that I had kept some resumes out. And then, lo and behold, I got a call from a credit union in a small town, well, not so small, called Marion, Ohio. And I will tell you about that next week when we come back with the the saga of Glenn Coble. And meanwhile, all this time, I'm doing broadcasting for different high school football, basketball programs, and enjoying that. And that's really quite the reason why I'm still involved in radio. I have always loved radio. I love the immediacy. I love the fact that what you say right now is heard right now. And very few radio stations back in the day recorded everything for playback. Now an awful lot of them do, and there are a lot of automated stations that have no live people. Not true with WWGH. We have a lot of live people, and we hope you listen, and we hope you enjoy. Anyway, let's get back with the name of the program, which is A Progressive Life. And again, our phone number, if you're interested in calling in, is 740-383-9944. This week has been up and down all around. It's been everywhere as far as the news has gone. And I'm not. You can get the news by watching TV or listening to the radio. You don't really need me to repeat it. I'm sure you know most of the stuff, but one of the things that seems to drive our news and our politics anymore is the taste of money. And that's one of the things I ran against when I was running for office, against the total control that money has over politicians and politics, which causes a lot of corruption, in my belief. I happened to look up this week the top 10, super PACs, I believe. It might have been just PACs, and how much they spent on politics this year. And super PAC, does not answer. They don't have to tell anybody who their donors are. But they are not allowed to support an individual candidate. They can support causes and that sort of thing, but they don't support candidates directly, but indirectly many of them do. Of the top 10 I went through, the top one was the NRA, and I understand from listening to current news that the NRA is struggling right now just to pay their bills after spending $35,157,585 through that PAC that they support. And they spent a lot of other money in other directions. But that they were the top organization for legislative action with 30, let's just call it $35 million that they donated. And donated basically to both sides of the aisle, but a very high percentage to the conservative side. Of the second one was the United States Chamber of Commerce, which is they spent about $29 million through their super PAC. And most of these organizations you're going to see in the top 10 are conservative organizations. There are only two, I believe, that are considered left-leaning. One of them is called Majority Forward, and they spent $10 million. And another one is Environmental Defense Action Fund, and they spent $4 million. But of the top 10, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of them, all the top five are conservative action. I had a little bit of dealings with this type of money. And it's called dark money. Nobody knows where it came from. Well, somebody knows where it came from, but nobody's telling where it came from. And that type of money really has nobody that can control it except the organization that's sending it. The government can't say what they can do with their money, and there have been several rulings that have allowed that. The Citizens United is one of the most egregious legislations that was passed that has allowed the freedom for corporations to become, well, I guess people, in that they can donate to whoever they want to. Millions and millions and millions. I'm looking, I checked out in 2018 election, and this is divided pretty much down the middle. There is an estimate that $5.2 billion, that is with a B, $5.2 billion were spent in political donations. And it was pretty much down the middle, with the Democrats, surprisingly enough, having a tiny edge in that. My relationship to dark money, when I ran, any money I raised on my own. I took a pledge almost as soon as I started that I would not accept money from the NRA, not because I have anything against the Second Amendment. But I just didn't want to take money from organizations that were supporting not having any sensible gun control. And at the time, the NRA, and probably still, has the belief that there should be no laws, or at least the outward belief that there should be no laws about weapons, guns. And so anyway, I took that pledge. I also publicly said that I was not interested in receiving any PAC money. And that came true with in ACES. I did not get any, nor did I get any offers from it. My opponent did receive $7,000 in dark funds. It was so dark that the local newspapers didn't even publish it, even after I sent them the information. And the local radio stations didn't cover it, which was kind of frustrating for yours truly. You would think that we would want to be as transparent as possible if we're going to be as honest with each other as we can. But it unfortunately seems like honesty has flown out the window recently as far as politics go. Claire McCaskill, who is no longer running, but one of the reasons why she was not unhappy about not running is her quote is, "I'm so tired of raising money." And that's when I was running, when every time I went down to the ODP, the Ohio Democratic Party meetings, that's all they concentrated on is you need to be on the phone day and night asking for money. And I find that very disheartening that all we care about now is money and not people. So therefore, I'm not dissatisfied with not winning. I'm glad that people listened to me. I'm glad that I was able to say what I wanted to say. And I'm not dissatisfied that I didn't win. If people want to have money run their lives, I guess that's what they want. Oscar Emmeringer, he is a political organizer, said that politics is the gentle art of getting votes for the poor and campaign funds from the rich by promising to protect each from each other. I kind of did that with my mother and father occasionally, so I'm not going to cast aspersions upon that that statement. Simon Cameron, who is the Secretary of War under Lincoln, said, "An honest politician is one who, when he is bought, will stay bought." So it's been going on a long time. The Civil War was, he was Secretary of War back in the 1860s. That seems to be a very true statement even to today. There were a few things in the news. The heartbeat law did pass, but it has to be signed by the governor. And I'm not quite sure why they're doing this, but they're trying to get Governor Kasich to sign it before he leaves office. If it gets to his desk, there's a high likelihood that he will veto it. If it goes to our new governor, and why am I forgetting his name? Anyway, if it goes to him, it's a well-known fact that he supports that type of legislation. The Center for Reproductive Rights has identified 20 states in which legal abortion will probably continue, even if Roe versus Wade is turned down, because they have already made laws stating that it's okay. So the people that are anti-abortion, the people that want to do away with that, all they're doing is moving the population that needs that type of service, I guess, to another state. And there are about split down the middle as far as states that are pretty much in favor of continuing the Roe versus Wade laws and those that are against it. Now, 20 of the states have actually made laws stating that it is abortion is legal in those states. Ohio is not one of them. The nearest state to Ohio would be West Virginia. I think West Virginia is the closest one. New York would be another one. If there is a need for that service, the people in Ohio will just have to drive across the border. I find it difficult to believe that people want to legislate a woman's health And that was one of the things that I ran on when I was running for office. And I know there are a lot of people that disagree with it, good people that disagree with that idea. And I think we should continue the discussion. But right now, the law of the land is Roe versus Wade. Another thing that I happen to notice in the news is that we've had the highest level of gun deaths in 40 years. Not that I know what it was 40 years ago, but this year there have been over 54,300 gun incidents this year. Excuse me. And I also ran for sensible gun control. I have hunted in my day and have nothing against the idea of hunting or even self-protection, but I think we need to be a little bit more sensible about how we're doing things. I'm not going to get into any of the other things that I have written down here because I'm getting awfully close to closing the show, but I do want to thank you very much and remind you that we will have that Christmas show tomorrow evening at 7:10, and we hope you will join us. And I'm going to be here for that show. I will be off next Monday because I am going to be driving to see my grandkids and have Christmas with them. I hope you have a wonderful Christmas. And I will join you the following Monday after that. And make sure that you keep safe out there on the highways as the I don't see snow in the forecast, but you never know. In the state of Ohio, that weather can come on any time. Have a great Christmas, and I will see you around New Year's. Have a good night.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM LP Marion, Ohio, your place for holiday fun. For Marion's reigning queen of dance of 75 years, Martha Dowse.
Was the night before Christmas and all through the house. Not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. And that rhymes with Dowse, Scott. He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work and filled all the stockings, then turned with a jerk. And laying his finger aside to his nose and giving a nod up the chimney he